Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we have a great show dealing with metaphysics and spirituality and some elements of science and some other areas of our concerns and thoughts. I would like to let you know tonight I'm going to talk about leadership, creativity, and the first part of God's mind. That's a whole mouthful for a title of a show. And it's going to be a little different than if you've heard other shows that I've done, either on this station or some other ones, on leadership. This is going to be a bit different because it really isn't centered, so to speak, just on that issue. It really has to do with more practical issues that a lot of people have in their life about being creative and finding themselves, you might say, in being expressive and using their will in directions that produces a life that they find to be meaningful. Whoa. So that's what we're going to be going into. Also, if you are interested, you can actually now listen to me over the telephone. That's right. You can call in to the one of the numbers, I guess it's right there before you, and you can actually listen in, even if you're not around a computer, and if you have a cell phone and you can afford the minutes, you can tune in and listen to the entire show via your phone, cell phone or corded phone or whatever you've got. So that's another convenient thing, and I find that to be quite interesting because now it gives each of us freedom to be doing other things, going other places, away from a computer, say, and still being able to tune in. I think that's fantastic. And kudos to the people at this station, who BBSradio.com, that have managed to put this thing together. So they're doing it for other shows, they're doing it for our show, and I think that's terrific. Also, because of the present circumstances of where we are on the schedule, we can go further. We can go longer again today. We're going to go to approximately 15 minutes after the hour. We'll also take a break more or less in the middle of that period of time so that we can cover more of the subject area, which I think is fantastic. And that gives me a lot more time to yak and to also express what I think about things, and gives you a time. If you want to, you can call in and express your thoughts and other opinions about what we're talking about. So let me go into the first part of God's mind, since that really is what this is, the central issue here. The first part of God's mind has to do with the following words. The words aren't big enough in themselves to cover all of the concept, but they give you a general kind of direction of what this part of God is like. It's the creativity, which is in our title. It does involve leadership. It also involves sacrifice and will and choices. Now, the interesting thing about will is just a consistency of making choices. So if a person keeps making the same choice over and over again, we then say, that person has a lot of will. Okay. So that's how we define will. That's how I define will. And will is different than willpower. Willpower is when it's applied to the third part of our creator's mind, when we take a choice and we apply it to some energy outcome, something about the energy world around us, something usually about matter itself, and we keep applying it to that, then you have a lot of willpower. So you might use a lot of willpower to end up owning or buying a new car, because that's a thing. But you might get to that point by just using your will to be creative enough and consistent enough in performance and some type of ability to earn money so that you can reach that level of owning a new car. You see the difference between will and willpower. It's kind of an interesting thought, too, because one is applied strictly to the concepts of thought itself, and the other one goes well beyond thought. another important element to the first part of God's mind, which I call the very first, is freedom. So before there is even choice, one has to have the freedom to think. One has to have the freedom to make choices. One has to have freedom to do almost anything. If freedom is removed, then all of the subcategories that I described go away. There's no, if you don't have freedom, your creativity is stifled, your ability to do almost anything and everything is reduced. One could say that the only thing that is not necessarily significantly impaired is the ability to sacrifice, which offsets those qualities around us that may prevent us from being free. So if you seek more freedom, oftentimes it requires greater and greater levels of sacrifice. If you're in an environment that is attempting to reduce your freedom. Okay? Oh, how's that for something to think about? Okay. So here's some ideas, practical ideas, about this particular area of, we'll call it ageless wisdom. Some people might use that word, or metaphysics. And that is that for people who find themselves with the difficulty in their life of not being able to create very much and not being consistent in their ability to follow through with things, not having good diligence, you like that word, I like it too, and not maybe having the ability to direct themselves in such a way that they come out of life with meaning. Wow. There, we're talking about a little of the second ray now, affecting the first ray, consciousness. So meaning also comes in here, but usually we're talking about direction to these things, and that's where we're talking about being able to pull stuff together that are around us and create something with them beyond what we presently understand, increasing our levels of understanding. And when you do that, you can increase the meaning in your life. So meaning comes from both elements. You've got to have the creative side. You've got to have the ability to, we'll say, use your choices and make something of them, and then be able to direct them in a way that increases your understanding. And then, wow, life becomes more meaningful. It's a very wonderful process. How does leadership enter into this? Leadership is the choice to become a model that serves other people to be able to access and, we'll say, further join with God's first part of its mind. It helps other people do that. And let me tell you how it does that. When someone is a leader, the very first thing they need to do is they need to be more successful in all the elements that I discussed. They need to be freer in the way that they function. They need to be more creative. They need to be making greater numbers of choices and be able to stick with those choices, meaning that they have to have goodwill. And they need also to be able to make sacrifices. If they can do all those things at a higher level than most other people, they then become a leader. Leaders cannot be bestowed. You can't say, you are a leader, and someone automatically is a leader. They have to have these qualities that they have already developed in themselves in specific areas that affect other people in their choices and in the way that those people are creative, so that they then are a leader. Not everyone is a leader in all areas. Some people are better leaders in many areas, but not all. And a few people are great leaders in some areas, but a few only, and may lack leadership in a great many others. So leadership really applies to the area of choice. What kind of choices is a person making also determines to what level and to what kind of leader they become. Does that make sense to you? I hope it does. I know I'm going pretty fast here, but, you know, we're going to cover this pretty extensively tonight, so don't worry about it. Okay, so we have this very interesting thing. What about people who are the antithesis? That means like the opposite idea of leaders. Because if we need leaders to help people to do this, but aren't there people out there, and unfortunately too many at this time, who are not diligent, who instead of sticking to their choices or making very many choices at all, choose not to? Well, those people have a real problem because they cannot be very creative. If they try to be creative, they fail in their creativity because they can't stick with whatever it is they're doing to create anything. Whatever they start with falls apart before it's finished. They are the people who are wanderers. They may start a lot of things, but they seldom finish anything. And this is a real problem. And their problem is with the first part of God's mind. Now, you might say, well, why don't they just change? Or if you're already one of these people, you can identify this in yourself. If you're a procrastinator or if you're someone who starts but can't finish, those are two different qualities. And then you might say to yourself, well, what's going wrong with me? How come I can't do this? And the answer is a little strange because it seems almost counterintuitive. And that is that most people who are, we'll say, stuck in the mire of not being able to consistently use their will, not being able to use choices consistently to create will, to carry through to create something, are usually afraid of failure. They don't want to face their own inadequacies, and they are scared to fail because it brings them closer to a very deep-seated but subconscious sense of dying and not existing. And more than dying in a physical sense, we'll say I prefer the word not existing in a conscious sense. So what frightens them so is, gee, if I really can't do what I want to do here, even though I may have a great idea, it seems, but they don't proceed with the idea. They don't do anything. They don't create anything other than maybe a small framework. Then the results are pretty disastrous, but the underlying cause in these cases is a gross sense of inadequacy. Sometimes it's referred to in psychology as a disorder in the personality itself. But it's really something different from what psychologists necessarily say, because it also is a fear of not existing, and a fear that after death, we don't exist. So for a large segment of the people, not everybody, who has a problem in being creative, the first thing that they have to be looking at in themselves is getting over their fear of loss, complete loss of consciousness, or real death. And this fear is the incipient cause in many cases. The people that have this don't know it. And they sense everything in terms of their inadequacy. They doubt they can succeed. And then they have this fear that their lack of success is also an example of the fact that their consciousness is going to end. There's a kind of, it is a connection. I'll get deeper into it later. There's a connection between these two. And they then usually are the people who are either agnostic or pretty well convinced that there is no creator or God. And unfortunately, from that position, they become wholly inadequate. They also, unfortunately, become, in many circumstances, but not all, darker, because they aren't seeking a major part of God. This is the first part of God. They're not able to use their senses of God, being a human being, we have these, and sense their own creator as much. They lose that sense that God is in them and all around them. And this further frightens them, and it also may drive them into becoming dark. Dark meaning doing things that are anti-virtue, that are against the thought generally of how God exists. And so people who have this inadequacy and may be declared in some way having some type of disorder in their personality are usually more prone towards the darker side of existence, and some actually become some type of criminal. Not all, by any stretch. As a matter of fact, the vast majority are not criminals, but they may be very selfish or self-focused. They lose a huge element of what it means to be human. Now, if you find yourself having this right now, as I'm talking about this, even if you're saying to yourself, you know, that sounds a little bit like me, or it sounds like my first cousin, or it sounds like whatever, there are answers for this. So don't hang up if you're on the phone, and don't turn off the computer if you're there, because I'm just starting off here. There are answers to these issues, and we're going to get into them tonight, because, like I said, I like having this extra time each week to share with you, because it gives us a lot more opportunity to come up with great answers for how to deal with some of these problems. So I hope I haven't gone too far with this. A lot of stuff I just covered. Some of you probably said, holy cow, we started off this leadership thing, and then we're all over the place. Yeah, well, I told you it's going to be kind of a big area. I take a bigger chunks out of it with these shows now. Some of you have been listening long enough, I think you actually know some of this stuff already, so that's great. And those of you who haven't can go back and listen to the earlier shows where you might have missed some of what I am referring to, and you can pick up on it. Okay, so this is a problem, and how many people are like this? Well, it's significant. It's over one out of five people. It's over 20% of the population falls into this category on an average, and in some areas and in some parts of, like, our country, which is, I'm speaking from the United States, but it could be as high as one out of two people or more. That's a scary number. And that means that those people are not getting much meaning out of life. They're finding that there isn't a lot of leadership around them, because there's a lot of people like themselves who have this sense of inadequacy. Creativity is at a low level. There's a lack of will. So people may start things, but they have trouble finishing them. And they're not in touch with God. They may go to church. They may even be devout in some respects, although I would say the majority probably aren't, but some might be. But even in that devotion to the religion, they aren't necessarily close to their Creator, because they don't have this sense of their Creator. Also, they may be lacking too much in the area of defending for, seeking of, and creation of freedom. They may not defend freedom for others or care about it for others. They may not care, you know, I've talked about some elements of the present government in the federal government lacking, having tyranny in its motives and lacking the development of freedom for all, which is what this country is supposed to be about. And those people may actually not care about that. They may be blind to the issues that I have talked about and others are presently talking about, because to them, it's difficult for them to even concern themselves with the element of freedom, because they are their own worst enemy. More than the government or anything else in preventing them from being free, they are doing it already by their corruption of the first ray and the first part of God's mind, in the way that they use energy in their life, the way that they create in their thoughts a lack of consistency and a narrowness, a continually narrowing level of thinking with a sense of inadequacy and dread underneath it of death. If you're overly concerned about that, you are more concerned about the government taking care of you or anybody else taking care of you, rather than you having freedom. And then, unfortunately, you may vote the wrong way, you may think the wrong way as far as I'm concerned. When I say wrong, I'm using my own values here, because you're not following the first part of God's mind, to maybe even fighting it to some extent. And does that mean that everybody that disagrees with me politically is in this camp? No, it does not mean that. It just means that some people have this particular problem and fall into that side, not by choice so much, but by, we'll say, consolation prize or something like that, because this is the results of their own lack of will and their own lack of choosing to be free, because freedom to them actually is a nuisance, maybe even a frightening element. Gee, if I'm free, who's going to take care of me? Yeah, kind of mentality. So that's where it comes into play. And it is right now creating a lot of conflicts throughout the world. This is not just a U.S. issue if you live in the United States. I know many of you actually listen from other countries. But wherever you're at, this is something that is epidemic. And it's not peculiar to one type of nation or another. It really is something that is sort of like, well, it's ubiquitous is the best way to describe that. It means it's like everywhere. And it's hard not to find it, actually, even in the places you would think that it wouldn't exist. Okay, so I hope I've painted a pretty good picture about what I'm trying to get at tonight. This is a little more complicated, but I find it very intriguing and interesting. So let's take some examples. Let's say someone is interested in becoming a chef. They want to become a good chef, someone who wants to learn how to become maybe not the best, but a well-known or a pretty good chef, maybe work in some kind of restaurant environment, or maybe they want to do it for their family or friends or something. But they would like that. This is one of their areas they appreciate, bringing out the flavor of food and the presentation and giving people the satisfaction of eating the best kinds of foods in the best ways prepared. And they do this because it's creative. But let's say that our chef has some sense of inadequacies, some senses of inadequacies, and is having trouble with the first part of God's moon. Well, now let's see what takes place. Let's say that this individual goes to school, okay? They pay their money, or they maybe get a grant or a fellowship or whatever and pay some money as well. And they now start going to some culinary school that is teaching them how to become a chef. And as soon as they enter the program is going to challenge them. Because becoming a chef is not just learning to do A plus B plus C plus D in a correct manner. Chefs are supposed to be able to create, right? You learn the A plus B plus C, you know, et cetera. But that doesn't make you a good chef. It just makes you someone who could be a good chef if they choose to use the information and knowledge that they have in ways that becomes more creative. They have to create things, right? So while they're going to school at the beginning of the process and learning the very basic things, they might do okay. But they also have some trepidation. The trepidation comes in because they can already see that they're going to need to be able to overcome this sense of inadequacy of being able to create. So immediately, almost immediately, fears and doubts enter into their education. And they start making more and more mistakes because they are limiting their ability to use their senses properly because they're constantly concerned about themselves and failing rather than creating things for the benefit of others. As soon as they do that, they actually decrease their senses. Now, this is hard to imagine, but let me explain how it works. If this person, I might say male or female here, if this person is choosing to focus on themselves because, gee, I don't think I'm going to be able to do this because I screwed up 50 times before and this kind of thing, and I know as soon as I've got to create something, I'm really going to mess up and everything. Okay, that's going through their head, and while they're trying to be, quote-unquote, freer and more expressive and creative, they can't focus on what that's about, which is pleasing other people, not just about themselves, and also creating something that is an expression of God itself, something that makes everything more beautiful, because even the palette has beauty to it. But besides that, there's also presentation and something unique that brings joy to somebody because it's so suddenly different, and also something that has beauty to it. It stimulates the senses of other people in many different ways. So these are great virtues that could be presented in their food, but unfortunately, this is what happens. While they're trying to be creative, and I'm sure that if they go to a decent culinary school, they would be trying to get them to do that, they start becoming focused just on that screwing up, not screwing up. Now, some of you may have watched one or more of these reality shows that actually deals with chefs. And the reason I brought this particular subject up is because I know that if you do watch those shows, the reason I've watched them a few times is to watch the people who do exactly what I'm talking about. They become so self-focused that their senses decline, and then they can't tell what tastes good or bad. They can't put the pot on the stove for the right amount of time without knocking into something else. They can't do something with turning on the oven in the right temperature so they either burn something or it doesn't cook. How many times have you seen that happen? That's because they're focused on themselves and their own inadequacy rather than on being a creator, co-creator with their God. And now what happens? The senses, when you focus on yourself, the energy that comes into the sense, which is just information. A sense has energy in it that is a little better in focusing and attracting energy around it, and that's how it becomes a sense. And then that energy is supposed to go through that sense and become free-flowing knowledge that then is given to others. But if you're focused on the sense itself because you feel inadequate, the energy stays in the sense and damages the sense and reduces the sense. And that's what we see in these reality shows. Now you might say, are you really watching reality shows with those kinds of thoughts in your head? Yes, I am. Believe it or not, I really do that. But you don't have to, but if you choose to, I think you're going to find that there's great verification in what I'm explaining. Okay, so that at that point, the person becomes disabled. It's not just a question of a lack of will anymore. There are some of that happening, by the way. But it's also, strangely, a true disability because their senses have become weakened. They actually make what we call to be mistakes. They cook things that don't look right. They cook things that taste less tasty to the palate than others. Than they might have done if they weren't in a sense of inadequacy and self-focus. And the willpower starts to diminish in many respects anyway. They can't really end up with a creation that is complete in its needed ways because their will is shaky. It moves. They can't consistently make the same choice and they flip-flop back and forth. Some of these shows, the most interesting part, and this doesn't have to just be with cooking, is that the people say, well, I always did it this other way and it worked fine, but for some reason I chose to do it this other way, which didn't work at all. Why did they do that? Because they were feeling inadequate and they couldn't keep their choices consistent as they had in the past. That doesn't mean people shouldn't be somewhat experimental, but if you reach a certain level in experimenting, you can push on it a little bit. But if you push on it a real lot and you say, well, I did it because I wanted to show how experimental I really could be, that's usually a cover-up for this sense of inadequacy going on when you didn't want to do, well, you chose not to do the right thing enough and you chose, therefore, some wrong decisions. And you went way off the deep end. That happens to a lot of people who have a sense of inadequacy. And they cover it up with these various rationales and these goofy behaviors, unfortunately. Okay, so how do we get around this? Let's say that we are on the reality show, and we're going to go ahead and see how we can win the Chef of the Year, whatever award it is, or whatever, and what will be the best way to proceed. Well, the first thing is to try to exhibit leadership. I don't know if you're aware of it, but a good chef not only has to be able to create and needs to also be able to create things that are beautiful in presentation as well as tasty. They also have to lead others around them because they have many people they depend upon, but who they are a leader to. So the first thing you have to do is be a leader, and that means, remember, a leader in any area is someone who is able to make constant choices and show goodwill by showing good judgment and working towards the beauty of God's mind in the first way that it can be represented, that gives freedom to others who work for them or with them, but at the same time, he acts as a great example, and when necessary, can limit the freedom of others if those others are in the more inadequate realm and they're functioning in a dysfunctional way. They can actually choose to intervene in those situations to help those other people out, but never so much as to deny them the ability to be creative in some way. So you still want to allow others to be creative at some level, but you have to find the level, if you're a good leader, where people are successful at making choices consistently using will and are working virtuously. If they're self-focused, you have to keep living. Because if they're self-focused, you know they're going to fail. So if you're the chef on the show and you have other people that are working for you, in some shows that's true, in others it's not, and there are other people working for you, you have to make a choice whether you're going to limit them or not. You have to see whether they are creating virtue or not. Are they focused out? Do they have humility? Humility is a big, big point. We'll talk about it in the second half. But do they have these qualities? And that's a great leader. That's the leader that you want. And as soon as you see that they're able to go ahead and do more, you back off. Oh, here's more freedom. Go ahead. Go do more. And if they are self-focused and screwing up, then you come in and you say, no, I'm going to have to limit you until we find the point. We find the point where you function at your highest level possible in making as many choices that are in the direction of God's mind and where you're not damaging your own senses by self-focus, where you're creating beauty and joy, you're doing wonderful things in the world. That's what the leader does. Fantastic thing that a leader does. And that leader is so in touch with God's first part of its mind that that leader is literally becoming an extension of God itself. That's a great leader. That's the kind of leader that brings light into themselves and to everyone that they lead or everyone that is even around them, even if they aren't necessarily directly under the leadership of that particular person. So chefs have to be great leaders, really, especially if they're a high station chef. They have different categories, of course. Okay, so what else? Well, the chef has to exercise examples of creativity, not so others can necessarily copy them, but so that others can be creative themselves. The fear of creativity is that creativity is the highest likelihood of failure comes from creativity. So if we just do the same thing over again, the chances of failure are low, but the meaningfulness and the wonderfulness of what creativity gives us is gone. So in order to get people to become creative, they have to have some encouragement by watching others who are creative and don't fail. Now, how can you be creative and not fail? You are creative and you don't fail when you exercise will, goodwill. And the will needs to be in the direction of creating virtue for others. And it needs to be accompanied with humility. Any leader who doesn't have humility will eventually create bad will instead of goodwill. So in order to create goodwill, you've got to be humble. What does that mean? That means that your successes are measured and how much others become more creative, how much others become more functioning with goodwill. The more that others are becoming leaders themselves, the more that others are focusing out and not destroying their senses and aren't feeling inadequate. That's how you sense your worth, not based upon what you do individually or a sense of superiority to others or a sense of arrogance, which is even worse. Those kinds of things lead to bad will. Bad will is you might be consistent in your will, but you don't encourage people to do good things. And you don't encourage yourself even to do good things, and you end up doing destructive, very bad things. You might become a criminal, as an example. Some criminals actually have very strong will, but they have bad will, you see. And so that's where you get off into the wrong side of things, and it's never a good thing to do. Okay, so hopefully that makes some sense to you all. And we're going to go further into more examples and more things that I think will open up this area, how to overcome inadequacies. That's a big deal. Some of you out there feel inadequate in some areas. I hope that something I'm going to explain in the next half will make some sense to you and will help you to overcome those senses. If you go to school and you reach a certain point and then you always flunk or you give up or something, that's a sense of inadequacy. If you have circumstances in relationships with other people where eventually it goes south, it goes bad for you, goes sour, then I'll tell you what you can do to overcome that. And it's also related to a sense of inadequacy. Some people use a fake superiority, they make it up, to cover their sense of inadequacy. That's very interesting to see that, but it still doesn't change anything. People that do that are not any less inadequate. They are more so. And they actually have more weakness in themselves, and they certainly do not have a strong will. They have a weak will in terms of any area that is involved in the good part or the God part of themselves. So that's something to realize and understand. Okay, so we're going to be back from break in a little over 2.5 minutes. And when we come back, I'll go much deeper into the things that we can do for ourselves to improve on all the things that we have talked about so far.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we're talking about leadership, creativity, and the first part of God's mind, a whole mouthful. And not surprising with that big of a title, it's quite a show. It's really spreading out in all kinds of areas. I hope you're finding it interesting. This is one of those shows where I'm thinking that for some people it would become a real help. And for others, maybe an enlightenment to know those that need help and to see it around themselves. So I hope that's going to make some difference. We're always trying to make a difference, I think, in what we do here. Okay, so let me continue on. We just went through the example of the chef, possibly on some type of reality show, but it could be a chef just in real life, right? And so when we look at these issues, the underlying cause of people, for the most part, in their failure to be able to consistently make and stay with choices and to do the thing I call goodwill, is they, and some people say it by this way, if you're into ageless wisdom, it's called will to good. And some people prefer it said that way. So if you like will to good, that's fine. I'm all right with that. But at any rate, the question then becomes, okay, so what do you do? You got this sense of inadequacy. It may have come from a prior lifetime. It may be compounded or started in earlier experiences when you were a child. How are you going to get over the sense of inadequacy and the fears that I talked about? Well, if you remember from the first part, or if you're just tuning in, I'll say it for you again, the actual problem has to do with the spiritual sense of God. We have two senses as human beings that animals, by and large, don't have. And that is, we can sense our own creator. We can actually sense this being that exists as God. And then the second thing is, we can sense how that being can create or chooses to create in itself. So we have those two senses. And those two senses are not found in animals. That's why they don't concern themselves with religion or God or any of the things that human beings seem to be very, very focused on. I mean, sometimes to our detriment, yes, but we are very focused on that. It's a common issue. Even if you're an atheist, by the way, don't tell me that you aren't concerned about what life is about. Don't tell me you don't worry or wonder about your choice to believe that God doesn't exist, because I know otherwise. It's a part of human nature, because we have a sense that is there that continually lets us know about God, even if we deny it. As a matter of fact, the more you deny God, the more this sense is insulted, so to speak, and the more it gets clogged up with energy, and the more it bothers us. So the people who are most bothered by their sense of God are not those who readily agree with the sense, but those who readily deny it. Now, what happens if you deny the sense of God? Well, when you deny the sense of God, you start to feel inadequate. Now, this doesn't mean that you necessarily develop some kind of personality disorder, but you certainly have a feeling as though you can't necessarily do things for yourself in a creative and free way as much as people who sense God. So I'm going to draw some examples here, and please forgive me if you think I'm generalizing, because I may be. And that is that people in general who are usually atheists, oftentimes, more than not, seek some other entity, being, existence that takes care of them and makes them feel safe than those who truly sense God in an open way, not sense God and deny it, but sense God in an open way and respond with creativity and consistent choice and seek to be free and help others to do the same. Those people tend to not want others to take care of them. They certainly don't want intrusion of the government in their life. They want all kinds of elements that are almost the opposite. Isn't that a strange thing? It's kind of a weird thing. And although both of them may want to be free to be creative, one wants to be creative as they see God being, which is to give freedom to others to create and for them to have the same abilities, whereas those that deny God tend to want to have a substitute parent, sometimes the government, sometimes an institution. It could be a higher learning institution or some type of employer even. It could be a lot of different things. But they seek some element of a superior authority. It could be any kind of authority, but they seek it. Isn't that strange? So when we look at our political system right now in the United States and in some other parts of the world, one of the things that's contaminating and destroying the ability to create good governments and factors like that is this misuse of our senses in a spiritual way that leads us to go in the wrong directions for our best development and for the development of our planet. It's a fascinating kind of thing, how this all goes back to this central issue and rests upon it. It's amazing. Now, there is the second part of God's mind that also gives us a sense of unity and wanting to be inclusive. That's important, too. But the first part has to be reckoned with before the second part can do what it is here to do, which is to raise consciousness and to allow people to gain such great understandings of themselves and others that they can exist in a oneness while still respecting and developing infinite individuality. Amazing. Both can coexist if you use both parts of God's mind in a balanced way. They cannot if you don't do that, and that's a serious problem. Okay, so what about overcoming this inadequacy? Let's say someone says, and I'm sure there's a number of people right now saying who are listening to this, well, I feel inadequate in this way, or I feel inadequate in that way. I took this class, or I went in for this kind of training, or I got this kind of job, and I couldn't do it. Or I opened a business and found out that it was a lot more difficult than I thought, and I wasn't up to the challenge of dealing with all of the pressures and threats involved. So these are the examples, and they're just examples, but there's a lot of them, of how people have senses of inadequacy. Some people have tremendous inadequacy in interpersonal relationships. They're okay at a distance, but they get close with somebody, and because they don't feel good about themselves, they can't let others get any closer than a certain distance, and then they shut them out, or they try to control them, or they do bad things so that eventually the relationship ends. You see, there are so many different ways to wrongly deal with inadequacy. Well, what about the right ways? What is the right way to deal with inadequacy? The first is to admit to it. You can't really change a sense of inadequacy until you say, I feel inadequate. Some of you who may have had problems and gone through 12-step programs might say, well, That's number one. Yeah. Okay, you got it. And so if you don't have that level of humility, you say, you know what? I feel inadequate. I don't feel as though I can really do this or that. And don't make up excuses for it. Just say, I just feel that way. And because I have that feeling, it's controlling my choices. It's a controlling my use of sense. So I look at only myself and not others. And I perpetuate the results, which is I screw up. And then I feel more inadequate after that. Okay. So the first step is to admit to and recognize that we are inadequate. Okay, feeling that way. Anyway, we're feeling inadequate. And then the next step is to recognize that by being a part of God, if we choose to be, now this is going to also sound like the second part of a 12-step program, but by being a part of God, but not following a religious tenet, because religious tenets are really boxy. They put you in very narrow places. And then you almost have to live your life based upon, again, some other authority. Okay, it's not the government, now it's the church. Oh, okay, it can be that. Or it's not your school, now it's what your pastor says or what your priest says. See, it doesn't change. It doesn't get you out of the sense of inadequacy. Instead, you look at what God says, and only you can hear God if you choose to. You can't hear God through someone else. You've got to hear God yourself. So that takes some meditation. That takes some reflection and contemplation so that you can become aware of what does God want. And then you function in a direction of God's mind, using that consciousness element again. And you do so that you can help others, serve of others, and then you start becoming eventually over time a leader. You're not going to be a leader right away, so don't try to be one. As a matter of fact, don't ever try to be a leader. You only can become a leader by your service to other people. You can't make yourself a leader. You can't become elected and say you're a leader. You can use the label, but it won't be the real thing. Okay, so if you can, and you will eventually. You really will. You've just got to follow what I'm suggesting here for a little bit, maybe blindly. But if you can, sense what God is, see God in things around you, and try to represent your creations in the way you understand God to be. That's what your purpose is. And in so doing, you're trying to serve others. That will tremendously overcome your sense of inadequacy. Tremendously. Nothing will do it better. If you were in a 12-step program, you would be serving your fellow members, right? But not here. We're not in a 12-step program. We're talking about trying to do this in every way for many people, not just one person, for many people in your life. You see other people as those that you serve, not those that you can get something from or that you can manipulate or that you can in some way take from. But the opposite. Everyone I meet is someone I can serve in some way. Let me see how I can do that. Just the thought of doing that and then the meditation of doing that will reduce much of your inadequacy. You've just got to try this. You're probably sitting there looking at this lily and said, sure, sure. But have you really tried it? Have you tried it and then said, no, it doesn't work? Or have you just thought it out and said, well, how could that do anything? Do it. You'll find that it does work. And the more you don't focus on yourself, and the more you develop that humility, remember I said we were going to get into this, the more you develop humility, the more adequate you will feel. And it won't be an issue. Once you get that sense of adequacy from doing what I just said, and you maintain it by being humble. Remember, you can't do the old Ben Franklin dilemma. He chose 20 things that he thought would be godly virtues to create in himself. And he actually a number of times got through the first 19, but the last one was pride. And he was, and this is a true story, and he was so proud in each circumstance that he went through all 19 of them in any particular day or week or whatever he was using it for, that he always felt too proud to give himself the last stage of developing the wholeness of virtue. And he finally realized that he wasn't ready. He wasn't humble enough to become a full virtuous person. He still had the pride of having done it. Interesting thought. So yes, you can have pride, not in the sense that we are using it in a spiritual connotation. And you need to have, you could be proud of the fact that you don't have pride in some respects. I know that's contradictory. You can say, gee, I think it's wonderful that I don't have pride anymore hampering me, and that I'm being a leader to others for that purpose. It's a little paradoxical and contradictory, but nonetheless, I think you can see the difference there. Okay, so now let's assume that we've gotten that far with this, and you have tried this, and you say, hey, that guy is not crazy. It's actually working. Okay, so then as you start to move away from a sense of inadequacy, the next step is to get to this area that I also mentioned in the first part of the show, which is sacrifice. Once we overcome some of the elements of inadequacy, and that could take you months, by the way. Don't think this is going to be the easiest thing in the world to do. It is not. Particularly if you've had a lifetime of doing this sort of thing. Believe me, it's going to take some doing. By the way, you can contact me. I'll help you with this, or others that I co-serve with, can do the same. And so, okay, so here you're getting over your feeling of inadequacy. Now you say, okay, I'm still having some issues. First of all, part of me is not free, partly because I live in a society that is constantly trying to hamper me in freedom. Between the church I belong to or the synagogue, and or the school I go to, the employer I have, the country I live in, the city I live in, or the county, everybody's doing something to counter my freedom, and what am I going to do? Well, remember I mentioned that sacrifice becomes the next element in this process. Now, what do I mean by that? Do I mean that you're going to, nail yourself to a cross to prove that you sacrifice or something? No, just the opposite, actually. You've got to, at some point, make choices that will reduce or limit some of the choices that you may favor for your personal gain. You lose the elements that will give you personal gain, including material things, for the sake of the greater good. Now, I'll give you an example. The group that I am a member of is fighting evil in some really bad ways, a serious corruption in the particular state we're in. It's called Arizona, for those of you who, of course, know where that is. And there's some corruption at high levels in the courts and other places. And it would be a lot easier for us to have walked away, or to walk away even at this moment. We would have enormous amounts more material things, money, if you want to put it that way, but material things, and a lot more time to do all kinds of stuff. But the problem is that this is a real evil. And we are pretty good at making sacrifices and pretty good at leading and pretty good at using our will. And if we have to, fighting evil in its terrible ways. But others aren't. And we recognize if we don't stand up for some of the things that we're dealing with, others will have no chance at all. So we, whether we like it or not, because we're all part of God, we'll say this cross to bear right now. But it isn't that we're nailing ourselves to it. It's that others are attempting to, and that we are standing up not to protect ourselves, but to protect others. That gives us the ability. So the sacrifice has to be for others. You can't make sacrifices for yourself. Even if it's to go through some kind of terrible punishment because you believe that you like to be punished for all the bad things you've done in your life and you whip yourself three times a day, that's not sacrifice I'm talking about. I'm talking about real spiritual sacrifice is for the benefit of others, but you're going to be giving up material things for yourself and other elements too. Sometimes you're going to be giving up personal relationships, not because you need to be distant from people, but because the people that you are relating to don't want to make anywhere near the kind of sacrifices you do, and so you can't relate together. That's a terrible thing, isn't it? I mean, you might lose your family in some respects if you make some sacrifices, because you're using your material parts of your life, you're using your time and energy, maybe to fight evil, like the nature I just described. If you're doing that, others might just say, I don't have anything to do with you. I want to spend my life playing golf or going places. Let's go to Disneyland. I don't want to do this stuff. And then, sure enough, the relationship could end. You see. So sacrifice means something considerably different when it involves spiritual matters. But it tremendously overcomes the aspects of inadequacy. The more a person sacrifices, the more adequate they feel. It sounds crazy. I know you don't believe it right now unless you've tried this. But because a lot of people say, well, that's counterintuitive. If I sacrifice for this or that, I'm going to feel miserable. Well, you might suffer to some extent. You might have some pain. Who knows? You might even get killed. But the point is, you won't feel inadequate. You're just going to have to trust me and try it. You don't have to trust me, but I would like it to, just to try it a little bit and see if I'm right about this. You'll actually feel stronger. You'll feel better. You'll sense in a much more meaningful way everything around you. And you will know that you're working for God and with God. For others' sake, not for yours necessarily. But we're all one. So if you see it that way, then you know that it is for everyone. It's for the greater good. It's for the will to good. That's what it is about, the will to good. And against those who might be doing the will to bad. And not all sacrifices has to do with evil. Matter of fact, very few actually deal with it on the level that I'm discussing. The level I'm discussing, you better do it as a group, because if you don't, individuals get eaten up by this sort of thing. Only groups are strong enough to deal with real evil, believe me. You need to be with a group of people who are doing it. Don't try and do it alone. You get up into the higher regions and evil will overpower you if you're alone. Okay, so sacrifice becomes another crucial element in getting closer to this example of what I'm trying to show in terms of leadership and creativity and developing purpose in life, a meaningful life when you increase it, when you join it with consciousness. And let's talk about that element now, because we're running out of time, so we want to make sure we cover that. The second part of our Creator's mind is love and consciousness, givingness, planning, all of those things, and many, many more, inclusiveness. And once we've developed some level, we'll say, of consistency of choice, and we are creative in a way that's virtuous, and we can follow through on those things that we choose to by keeping the consistency of choice, we are also willing to sacrifice for the greater good, even to the level of facing and fighting evil. If we're at those points, we need to balance that with our level of givingness and with our level of directing the choices so that they're consistently towards improving what I will call a larger and larger sum of others. That's how a soul thinks. I want to keep expanding those that I'm touching with all my creations. Not just build it to some level and be happy with it, like you've joined an organization or something. Just the opposite. You want to be free to keep growing, and so that the things that you create in using the first part of God's mind, are universally going out and becoming larger and larger and touching more in others every day. This is a tough job. If you can balance the will of the first part of God's mind with the inclusiveness of the second part of God's mind, you now have become a spiritual being. Technically, if you can do this virtually all the time, you're no longer a human being. Human beings are out of balance by definition between these two parts of God's mind. Superhuman beings, or human beings that have graduated from being human, are no longer out of balance. They are almost all the time in balance between the two parts of God's mind. They can also do one other thing. They can use willpower. They can consistently create things that become manifested in the three worlds that humans are familiar with, but we'll call it the physical world for those who are physically alive. There's two other worlds besides that super beings can function in simultaneously. But nonetheless, to keep it simple, just think about being able, anything you are able to balance in your mind, you're able to create in material form. Wow. Now you're a great dynamo. And you will become a super leader. Because leaders that actually can end with a result that makes a material difference in the world are those that become like world level of leaders. Because they're not just coming up with great thoughts, you can be a very well known and great leader. But to be the greatest of leaders, you not only create great thoughts, which is the first two parts of God's mind together, great spiritual thoughts that may really affect everybody, which is a great teacher, but then you become a world leader. And if you become a great teacher, go from a great teacher to becoming the best great teacher, and you actualize this in the world, changing the way the world actually is, you become a great world leader. There are very few of these. There's one or two in any time or age, at any one time. And those, and some times there are none, by the way, because it's a human being, and human beings come and go pretty quick. So, but then at that point, leadership becomes a totally different thing, because you're becoming a leader of all people on a whole world, in this case, Earth. So you become the leader of Earth itself. It sounds hard to believe, but you can reach that level. And eventually, each of us will reach that level. Some of us have a ways to go. But we're destined for that over time. It's just right now a very slow process. And very few people are attaining it. But it can be done in mass scale. And then eventually, if as more and more people become leaders capable of contributing to Earth, we will break out of our, we'll call it confinement, and we will actually have contact with other planets and then help planets that are less developed than Earth to advance themselves in certain ways. But that's a long way off for us right now. We've got a lot to contend with right here with our problems in inadequacy in the senses that we have damaged and we're trying to function through at the present time. All right. So, we need to balance, because if we don't balance, what happens is we become great philosophers, maybe, in some respects, but we do not actually have a great spiritual beingness to us. We're not going to be seen anything more than maybe as a philosopher, but not as a spiritual being. Being seen as a spiritual being means that the two parts of God's mind are now in pretty close balance, and they are almost functioning as a continuous development of more of our Creator. That's what the real creation is. We're creating God wherever we are. And then, if we go even further, we become a super leader if we can make this into a material outcome as well. That's way off in the future for most people. Right now, we're just trying to deal with, you know, getting these two parts of our minds together, becoming much more conscious, while we become much more willful and much more creative. While we develop purpose to our existence, which is fantastic, we also develop an understanding of that purpose and help others to do the same to The result is that we then have much greater meaning in life, which leads to joy and bliss, and that is the real way to sense God, is through joy and bliss, through the absolute nature of being a part of God right here. We come here to do this in every lifetime. Every soul creates a human being over and over, a different one, but that is attempting to do this. But unfortunately, we get into illusion, and we don't follow. We don't follow through, and we feel inadequate. Now, getting over the inadequacy can lead us back to our souls. So today's show, I hope, has brought us a bit closer in being able to do that very thing. I'm hoping, I'm going to keep my fingers crossed, that you are all seeing how this does lead in that direction. I'll finish what I'm going to say in a minute, but I did want to mention, since we're getting close to the date, on Monday, March 15th, Mimi is going to be over at Borders Books and Music in Mesa Fiesta, and that's 1361 South Amoskill Road. If you're in the Mesa area, Mesa's part of the suburb of Phoenix, so if you're in Phoenix, around Phoenix, you can go hear her from 7 p.m. to 8:15 p.m., The Seven Rays. She's going to talk about that. That's this coming Monday. No charge. You can just go and participate if you'd like to do that. And if you haven't heard already, you can get Ideal Cellsorption Resveratrol for either yourself or your pets, dogs or cats. And you can get this by, I got to get the name of the place here. It's coming up. Hold on. Here it is. You can contact ForeverYoungProducts.com, 800-777-7850. I use this stuff. It does work. It likely increases life expectancy without growing older from the increase in life expectancy by 30 to 50%. That's what you should expect in getting out of it. Probably closer to the 50% level if you're using this particular product. It's not that expensive, and it does so many things. I can't go into them right now, but it does so many things to help your body. You've got to try it. Give it a few months before you should expect to see the real results that come out of it. Also, Soul Balance, if you don't have some, get some. You can get it by giving a donation to Life Balance Association. You call them for more information, 602-472-5127. It's a whole formula. You take several different capsules and tablets together, and it will make a big difference in your life. If you have any kind of illnesses, infections, whatever's going on, immunity issues, this is a great product. You've got to try it and see how it works for you. I think you'll find it works great. If you want to get a hold of me, thoughts@whylifeis.com. Go to our website. I'm a member of a spiritual group, agelesswisdom.com. Check that out and see what's going on there. Okay, so let me finish today's show by just saying this. I got about a minute left here. And that is that hopefully it has made some sense in seeing that the basis of most people's problems in life, especially when they're missing meaning in life, has to do with their inability to deal with the first part of God's mind. It comes from an inability to adequately sense God. And if you can sense God, and you truly can sense God in your life around you, you'll get over most of the inadequacies. I gave you several different ways of doing this. There's a lot more we could talk about. I could give you a dozen different more ways, but I don't have the time to explain them right now. But nonetheless, hopefully you'll try what I suggested. If you couldn't remember them, or you can't remember, because this is a long show and had a lot of stuff in it, guess what? It'll be posted in a day or two. Listen to it again. And take notes. And then try some of the things that I suggested, because I think you're going to find that they work. And then you can say, send me an email. If it doesn't work, send me an email. If it does work, send me an email. I'd like to hear what your results are. Well, we are out of time for right now. So until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.